I was going to talk about the thing.
We've got stuff. I know what's happening.
You know, okay. If you know what we're doing, that makes one of us.
I am weirdly on my shit at the moment. Ooh, yesterday I edited. I got us. I was a couple of days behind on Convergence, so I got us a week ahead. And now we're recording like 3 days ahead, which is nice. And I wrote, recorded, edited, and scheduled next Monday's episode of Undo.
Hell yeah.
So I feel like an absolute, like my weekend, I don't know what I'm going to do. There's a part of me that's like, could record an episode over the weekend and then I'd get one ahead.
Yeah.
Which would be useful.
For sure.
But we'll see. It's just, it's nice. It's nice to be in this position.
Yeah, that's really great.
Good.
I'm kind of feeling a little bit similar. I now have, so I have that client that wants the end of May for that expansive bathroom remodel. Super stoked about that. They're all but confirmed, all but signed to the contract. But they've already started ordering materials, and they said, yes, we absolutely want you. So it's like, it's a pretty set thing. And then I have an old client that wants a kitchen remodel in the fall, which is actually kind of a funny story because they already did that kitchen. And I did a pretty major remodel in that kitchen, but we didn't do everything. We didn't replace the cabinets, and they're not super happy with the floor they picked out because it's showing more wear than they wanted it to. They just want me to come back and remodel that same kitchen again.
Lovely.
And yeah, so
perfect.
That's pretty great. And in between then, I'm talking to Margaret, and I'm thinking, we might finally do our own kitchen remodel in between those two, which is super exciting because that's something I've been wanting to do since I moved into the place, but it's always been like, that's going to be the big thing. And I'm not, you know, there's a lot of planning involved. There's a lot of design involved. And now I've taken the time to figure all that stuff out, but what it's so encompassing of the whole house because in order to do the... In order to do the kitchen remodel I want to do, I need to move the bathroom door to the hallway instead of from the kitchen. So if I do that, then I'm already tearing open the walls in the hallway. So I might as well do the repiping that I need to do for the water heater replacement. So I might as well do the water heater replacement at the same. If I'm doing the water heater replacement, I might as well install the whole house water filter that I bought that I want to do at the same time. And in order to do that, I have to take out a part of the wall that's in the laundry room. So I might as well do the laundry room as well. And so if I'm doing the kitchen, that means I'm doing the bathroom and the hallway and the laundry room. And so that's why this hasn't happened yet.
Yes.
It doesn't make sense to me to do any parts of those separately.
No. I fully get you.
Yeah. So that's been put off for a long time and it's been not. So it finally might be time, which is really exciting to me. And I feel like I'm a couple steps. The reason why I brought this up is I feel like I'm a couple steps ahead as well. I feel like I've got things planned. I know what's ahead of me. I haven't done them already yet, but you get what I mean.
I do. It feels good. It feels good.
Yeah.
But yeah, like that whole, the layers of, I can't even begin to think about attempting this thing until this other thing gets done that is very much connected to this other thing. It's like, the struggle is real.
Yep.
So you had some thoughts about moderation.
Oh.
Would you like to share them with the group?
Yeah. Yeah. Thoughts about moderation are not exactly how I'd frame it.
Okay.
But that's accurate. It's just my thoughts are that I don't have thoughts yet.
Yeah.
My thoughts are like, I realize I struggle with moderation. And the admitting it, the problem is the first step, right? So like when I analyze myself about this, like I can be interested in something. But then I can't just be interested. I kind of have to be obsessed with it. Like with podcasts, I couldn't just listen to a couple podcasts I like. I had to listen to fucking 24 episodes a day. I can't just have one, because you know, one is good, more is better. I can't.
All is best.
All is best. Let me just fill all of my day with it.
Why have one when you can have more? Why have more when you can have all?
You get it now. Okay. I can't.
I get it. I live it.
And it's I did a little bit of yoga and I really liked it. And so I'm like, well, I don't know. Why don't I do 45 minutes a day of it? Like,
yeah.
I'm like, oh, I can do a 20-minute sit of meditation. Why not do an hour and a half? Mm-hmm. And, you know, sunbathing. I fucking, like, get out and sunbathe for 25, 30 minutes. And then I'm like, no, I'll stay out here for an hour and a half or 2 hours. And fucking feels great. And, like, also, this list, I can't even just tell you one thing. I have to keep going and give you more and more examples. But, I mean, obviously, food isn't easy one to point to. It's super hard to stop at one bowl of a meal. Like right now I have this task set for me by Unique of 6 portions a day of a palm sized portion of animal protein. And for one, I was struggling with the idea of what palm sized means.
Whose palm?
Because I don't, well, my palm is, that's the easy part. But my palm is thick, and I don't know. Like, do you mean the thickness of my palm?
Yeah.
Like,
what is the volume?
Or do you mean
palm?
Like what's the top
area we've got covered? Yeah.
The area is easy.
Yeah,
volume
area is easy.
Hard.
Volume is hard.
So
what is a palm cubed?
I thought I was supposed to eat like that, because if I made my palm without my hand without my fingers, which I consider my palm, if I just make that into like a patty of meat, like that's a third of a pound. So I'm supposed to eat 2 pounds of meat a day? That's what I was thinking. That's a fucking lot, dude. That's really... that's too much for me. that's all of the meat. And, that's too much for me to eat. And then, and yet, I was trying to, and I was making my like a big thing that I would eat 6 times, or, you know, I would eat a sixth of throughout the day, and I'd find myself like eating my portion and then wanting a little more and then wanting a little snack and a thing. And I couldn't, and even with knowing this and wanting to work on it, I'm like, oh yeah, I'll do intermittent fasting, or I'll do prolonged fasting. And I can't just do a fucking 3-day fast or a 5-day fast. I do a 15-day fast and I want to do a 40-day fast. Or I'm not happy with a 6-hour eating window. I want to do a 1-hour eating window, or a every other day eating window. And it's like, I don't know where the line is, and I don't know how to stick to it once I find it. And I don't like admitting this.
Oh, okay. That's, tell me about that.
I don't like it. I don't feel comfortable. And yet I'm constantly trying to make myself feel comfortable.
What feels uncomfortable?
I feel weak. I feel like I don't have control over myself. I have an inner monologue. When I go and have that chocolate bar that I'm not supposed to have, I'm like, I know I'm not supposed to eat this chocolate bar. And it's like, okay, yeah, you can change the language to be like, no, this isn't good for me. This isn't love me back. Whatever. It's all the same thing. You're just, it's, sure, some people find it better to talk to themselves in a different language. I feel like it's still the same. The point is still the same, is that ideally I'm not eating it.
You're too smart to be outsmarted by your own bullshit.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
exactly.
Why affirmations don't work. It's like, I'm sorry to anyone for whom they do, but like...
yeah, okay. They do work for some people, and that's great.
Maybe, but like, maybe, I don't know, like, I'm too smart to fall for my own bullshit.
Yeah.
Like... That's why they don't work, because on the other end of that, the person looking back at you is going, yeah, you're just saying that because it's an affirmation. Like, you can't outsmart yourself. And I understand about you know, relaying neuro pathways and stuff,
exactly.
But like,
yes, that's what I was
you've
got to,
like, you've got to believe it enough to be able to, like, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
I do believe that there is some credit to fake it till you make it kind of thing, where if you do say it to yourself enough, you do start to believe it. I have encountered that, but like when I And so I get what you're saying, and I agree to an extent, but I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, correct me, but I feel like when I'm saying to myself, like, I'm not supposed to eat this, I don't feel like that's the same
kind of
it's a realm. Yeah. I'm not telling myself I'm bad for eating it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like I'm bad for eating it. I just know that it's not taking me towards my goals
mm-hmm.
of losing weight and feeling better.
There is another competing goal.
Yeah.
At the time. Yeah. Wow.
Competing goals. That's frustrating.
Yeah. This is interesting. Welcome to the world of am I neurodivergent? ?
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, question mark for sure.
What was that you were saying inside your cup?
Question mark for sure.
Question mark?
I mean, I am weird and different.
Yeah.
That's clear as day.
Your crazy matches my crazy.
I love you too.
Yeah, I think, you know, that is a not uncommon experience. Like all or nothing, min-maxing.
yes. Yeah, I'm just min-maxing.
Yeah, it's you know, when I had my therapist who wasn't very, wasn't as good, that is one of the things he did point out. It's like you tend to, towards an all or nothing kind of mindset with certain things. And it's landed me in a lot of trouble. Because I go all in on, I'm going to exercise every day. And, because if I give up, if I fall down, then I'll never get back up again. And that's sort of where I am with undo. It's like, if I miss it, I'm kind of worried, scared about missing a week because I don't know what that, you know, it makes it easier to miss the next week. And then it makes it easier to not care as much. And then, you know, on and on and on you go.
Into
moribundity, which I don't know if it's a word. The noticing of it, how new is that?
I mean, it struck me this week, but it's been at varying levels of conscious awareness of it throughout my addiction recovery process. So 2003,
mm-hmm.
no, 2013, just a decade here, there, somewhere.
I think there's got to be a link between the bit. I mean, it's, you know, I have a lot of sympathy for people who have an addiction to alcohol because of, and I think it was put really well in The West Wing with Joe McGarry saying, I'm probably paraphrasing or mixing it up with someone else, but certainly the idea that the idea of just having one drink, like what is that? and that being the end of
a
the
tasty
night.
Tasty aspertif.
Aperitif.
I can't remember.
Aperitif?
Aperitif, that's the
aperitif. Digestif.
Yeah.
Like, knowing that's enough.
Yeah.
That was enough. That was enough drinks. You've had enough drinks when you've passed out. That's when enough is. When you're no longer conscious.
When you can't have any more.
Yeah, when you can't have any more, that's when you've had enough. And so it stands to reason if your addiction, if your the personality trait that goes with that kind of thinking, like if that leads you into something that we might call an addiction, whatever it is you're addicted to, it probably can also, there's the same part of the brain that can also lead you to finding all or nothing type solutions to your problems. And, We had this discussion a couple of weeks ago about the push and pull. I've been talking about moderation from the other direction, and balance. And because those are things that I've had to learn about my own tendency to veer wildly in different directions. I am nothing but healthy now. I am just a frat slob and I'm going to eat all the pizza. Like it's just binary.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it can be hard for us to find that middle ground. I had a bit of a revelation of sorts yesterday.
Well, cool,
revelation pending, let's say.
Okay.
So I think it was over the weekend, I had this realization that all of the things that have had the sort of biggest positive effect on my life have been the easiest to come by. My parents found this flat because they'd bought a flat that they were just you know, doing up and going to rent out across the road from me. My brother found my previous flat in a newspaper and just said, hey, check this out. And I went and I bought it. I won a game show with my dad. The job that I held the longest, I sent an email saying, is there a Mark size hole in your organization? And I went in for a sort of an interview and then I got the job. The job I had before that, I had an easy interview and then, or a fairly easy interview, it seemed, and I got given the job after a couple of hours. Podient happened because it was a side project and I thought it would be fun, and it just, it happened.
Yeah.
I've also worked very, very hard, and I've ground. I've done a lot of grinding.
Yeah.
And I don't really have anything to show for that. So, you know, there is the, there is, you can look at it on the, you know, there's the abundance mindset versus the scarcity mindset. You know, one to look at this is, and I have been here before, I work so hard and I haven't got anything to show for it. Versus the other side of that coin is the things that have meant the most to me have come the easiest.
Yeah.
So there was that thought. And I was thinking about it in terms of this hopefully new direction that I can go in terms of where my money, where my income comes from.
Yeah.
That then allows me to live reasonably comfortably and predictably and do the community stuff that I want to do. And that's come, if it works out, it will have come pretty easily. You know, I've had to put a metaphorical suit on and look sort of smart and send the information off to people. But that's not hard. That's just proving the stuff that I already know. You know, it may not work out, but so far, there's no forcing it. And you know, I was even looking at the website today, which is this thing that I, you know, have to send off for people to review and see if they're happy. And rather than tweak it, rather than mess with it, I just went, it's you've sent it to the guy. You will find out what the next stage is.
Nice.
Yesterday, as I was, I think it was as I was editing one of our episodes, I had the thought about my attitude towards food. And I have had the narrative, stop me when this sounds familiar, I have had the narrative from a very early age that I am someone who struggles with his weight.
I can
remember being in primary school, so like I don't know, 8 or 9, and there someone having some kind of conversation with me about like what healthy food is or what not healthy food, and it's like motherfucker, I don't make the meals. My parents don't feed me unhealthy food, but you know, my brother is thin as a rail, and but he likes football and he runs around a lot, and I don't. And my body is different.
Yeah,
that wasn't allowed to be a thing then because we didn't know that. But like, so from a very early age, the narrative has always been, you struggle with your weight, and that's something you need to be responsible for, and you need to, you know, do and fix and whatever.
Yeah.
So I had the thought yesterday, what if I stopped? What if I just stopped that? What if I ate when I was hungry and ate what I fancied?
Yeah.
And then stopped worrying about it.
Yeah.
And stopped trying to control it, being the big word. What if I stopped trying to control it? And I thought, okay, well, I know what will happen in the short term. In the short term, I'll just, you know, have all sorts of food. And, you know, I can put in rules and I can say, listen, you know, I don't eat late at night. I don't eat out of boredom, or I try not to eat emotionally. But if I'm hungry and if I fancy something, I'll have it.
Yeah.
And so my thinking is, you give it, I don't know, whether it's 3 weeks, 4 weeks, a little bit longer. And there is this thing called intuitive eating, which backs some of this idea up.
100%,
And I haven't looked into it deliberately because that, again, is that's making it a thing. And I'm trying to see what happens when I don't make it a thing.
Yeah.
Because intuitive eating is just another system.
Yeah, I read the book on that, and it's it's delightfully not a thing. They actually do approach it differently. It's relieving. Unfortunately, I read it kind of like as an overview, and I'm like, yeah, this is great. And then I put it aside and actually didn't really implement it yet. but I think if I were to, and this is a great reminder, I should get back to that. I should read it again. Because they had like some good meditations and practices in it. And I'm like, oh yeah, I have some tools for this.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for that.
Mm, yeah, yeah. And so I really thought, well, what might happen if... And I'd love to know what you think for yourself, because I understand you're on a particular healing journey, and so it's, you know, maybe it's different for you, maybe it isn't. But when it comes to things like moderate, I don't know, like, yeah, how does that sort of land for you? Because for me, I'm like, yeah. I can see someone looking at it and going, no, that won't work because you're broken, and that's your problem is you have this dysfunctional attitude to food, so you're always gonna eat when you're emotional or do certain things. And I don't know, my thinking is, I think we've talked about it, maybe there is I think if you stop and you listen to what you actually need, I think there probably is a voice in there saying what it authentically wants.
Yeah.
But it probably takes an amount of time to get to that voice, and you've probably got to have a bit of play or a bit of, you know, indulgence or whatever word we use for it before you get to that moment of, okay, now I think I know instinctively what I need.
Yeah. It sounds to me like that voice that's saying that I am broken, that I have a problem with food, like that's the negative self-talk that we do kind of need to reframe and use different words for. You know, maybe positive affirmations help with that. Maybe something else helps with that. But it is something to recognize. Like it's definitely not helpful when we tell ourselves that we're broken or that we have a problem with food. Well, having a problem with food, I don't know. That seems a bit more instructive or analytical. I don't know. Yeah, you asked about like how that resonates for me. And I mean, I completely have a similar background with, because like my mom was large, my dad was medium, my sister was small, and I was large. And I was much larger than all of the kids in my class. And yeah, I definitely felt other and I was made fun of a lot. And yeah, that absolutely like just instills this inner feeling of inferiority and otherness.
Something that occurs to me that, and I just wondered if it's okay, just sort of put a pin in it, but like, whatever. There are so many things that kids grow out of, but there's something so identifying, you know, about, you know, being told certain things about like whether it's your weight or whatever, that if that story in that crucial developmental stage from whatever it is, 5 to 8, if the story is you are someone who has a weight problem, then the thing that you, the other kids might grow out of, you never do. Because, you know, lots of kids have, whether it's puppy fat or whatever else.
Yeah.
And there are plenty of other traits that kids have that, or issues or whatever that they grow out of. But if you're stuck with that story, or that story has stuck with you,
right,
maybe you can't grow out of it. And that was just, that was my thought on childhood.
Yeah. Yep. This is making me want to get back into a small habit of self-hypnosis. I haven't been doing that in a long time. And I did find that very, very helpful when I was doing it. So Margaret and I have both kind of, not, I wouldn't say soured on TBM, but definitely left that sort of, that particular company behind, at least. Like, it was like Lacey kind of, but she both stepped aside and handed it off to Jessica. And so now it being run by Jessica, it feels so much different. And Lacey has kind of like just continued going like really far into her like direction, let's just call it, and she just feels weirder and weirder,
right? Okay.
And
sure.
Yeah, I don't know. But like, that doesn't change the fact that some of the tools that they provided like work really well. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give some of those a try and get back to the intuitive eating book. I think that might help me get a better grip on that. Cause one of my big struggles right now is like, I eat till I'm full. I don't try, like this has been a common refrain in our mm-hmm. podcast is I can't trust the messages my body gives me. Mm-hmm. I'll eat and I'll feel full, but I'll also feel hungry at the same time. And I don't know which one to trust. And like, I guess I don't trust myself. So in an Enneagram sense, like I feel like I'm somehow stressed. I'm really stressed about food. And in stress, I go to six. And in six, I don't trust. I don't trust authority. I'm supposed to be my own authority. I don't trust myself. If I can't trust myself, who can I trust? I panic and spiral. And so comfort myself with food, I guess.
And so I guess the maybe armchair psychologist wanker question is, what would that look like if you didn't have that, not relationship, but if like, I don't know, that's food having a lot of power over you and seeming to take away your agency.
Yeah.
What if you trusted yourself that if you actually felt hungry, that you could eat, and that maybe if you were getting hunger pangs and you're feeling full, then maybe that's your body telling you it wants a particular thing in your meal that you haven't got. You know what I mean? Like a craving for salt or fat or something that wasn't in that meal.
It's always sugar. Okay. Like, yeah, I'll eat a solid meal. I'll have a very scientifically proven good healthy meal, and then I'll want to have a fucking chocolate bar or an ice cream sandwich or just something sweet. I mean, I guess my things don't really have that much sweet in them, so there is that. But I try to incorporate like sweet onion.
I couldn't resist, just
poured a little of that red, green, and blue liquid that was separated out, and was just like, this looks delicious. Nubby. I should have some of that.
Yeah, I think the sugar thing, I think, is the craving aspect, I think, is that is one. But then, like, both of us, I think, believe in... Well, I don't know if you do, but I think I certainly want to be my best version of me. If we talk about the three principles, you know, was it mind, body, and... mind... Heart. I always get this wrong.
Oh.
Theory of mind, theory of... It's all words that feel like they're synonyms for the same thing, but it's actually three separate things. Michael Neal talked about it a lot, and essentially it comes down to our entire reality is based on our perception. And so much that feels so physiological is in fact neurochemical, because that's the only thing we have to feel things. We don't, there isn't a system by which we can feel things that isn't being mediated by the brain, because it's the brain that has to do the things to send the messages that make us do the feelings of the things.
That's mostly true. The brain holds the most amount of neurons in the body, and the stomach holds the second most. So I don't know. I think that's interesting. Michael Neal's three principles are mind, consciousness, and thought.
Thought. Thank you. Yeah. There you go. I struggle wrangling with this, and I was chatting to patron saint of the podcast, Anya, a week or so ago about this. I really like, there's a lot of it that I like it all. I don't always wrap my head fully around it. But in the idea that our thoughts shape our reality. And we've talked about chronic pain and how the body keeps the score you know, how trauma gets stored, all these various things. And so the idea of what feels like such a it's so baked in the into the hardware of having, for example, an addiction to sugar. Like, how can you overcome that? Because it's so low level. It's still mediated by thought, or by mind, you know, one of these levels. And that can be changed, that can be hacked. And so, like, I 100% sympathize is not the word, but I'm with you when it comes to, like, for example, a sugar craving, because that feel like it's just it's so in the firmware, and then it makes the ability for you to trust those signals a lot harder, or the ability to just finish with a balanced meal, because then you've got this other thing. And I think there's probably no way of, and it, like, if you keep reinforcing that as a problem, then that's going to be, you know, be more and more and more of a problem.
Sure.
So I don't know. I'm just exploring these as ideas. They might be extremely naive, but there's something in me that just wonders whether, you know, there is a way of the doing the complete opposite of being weird about it. It's like, how can we take the being weird about it and do its complete about face and be so normal about it that we're just like, no, I'm not someone who, and it doesn't need affirmations, it doesn't need all these things, it needs a casual sort of like today is today and we'll see what happens. I don't know. I keep like saying this thing and then bailing on it, but like, I have a hunch that there might be something there.
Yeah,
And I'm giving it a go anyway.
Nice. Well, report back.
Yeah. Well, so far I've had a cream egg. So far I had this morning, because this was the other thing.
I successfully avoided having any cream eggs this Easter.
Well, but done.
I did have Easter was packed. Oh man. So here, okay, another area where I and this is, I think, actually what triggered me sending the message to you. Maybe I sent that before Easter, but I knew it was going to be a problem by Easter. but we went to church. That was great. Fun time. There was an after party at church, and where they had little plates of a buffet of meats and cheeses and fruits and cakes, and I got the last little piece of meat, a couple pieces of cheese, had that first. It was great. It was delicious. And then they had cheesecake and carrot cake. Carrot cake's my absolute favorite cake.
I love carrot cake.
Oh, it's so fucking good. And this was a really good one. And I just had half. I had two bites of a small little square, and then I had a half piece of maybe three bites of the cheesecake. And I was like, man, that was great. And I'm done. I don't need to go back for more. I don't need to, that's cool. I'm just going to walk away. We walked away. It was great. Then we go to Margaret's parents and have a nice little Easter lunch, split pea soup with biscuits and salad. And it was fucking great. And then she served fucking rhubarb pie with ice cream afterwards, and I had my large slice of rhubarb pie with ice cream, and then went back for another half slice, because, which nobody else did, but I'm thinking to myself the whole time I'm stepping up, I'm like, not, you know, I'm one part of my mind is thinking, I don't need this extra slice, extra half slice, that I'm telling myself, well, it's just a half slice, that's fine. But and I don't need it, sure, but I really want, I'm fucking so tasty. It's so good. It's making me feel good. I'm good. It's good in the moment. And I'm also, there's another part of me that's thinking, everybody else, consciously or subconsciously, can see that I'm the only person getting up and getting another piece of cake or pie. And so I'm monitoring myself through other people's eyes, even though they're not saying anything. But I know, within me, I know that they can see and sense me doing these things, whether they care about that or not, it's happening. So that I found out really, really interesting. And then we go to another party. We go to a friend's party who has a bunch of people from church coming, and It was great. And they had pie and they had cupcakes and they were like olive oil, sour cream cupcakes. So I'm like, maybe this is not so bad. So I had one of the, not, they weren't cupcakes, they were muffins. They were glazed muffins. So it's kind of cupcakes, but anyways, your face is going all over the place. Mm-hmm. and it was good. And I just had one and I was like,
one
it was a little dry. but it was fine. It was too crumbly. It made a mess all over me. I wish I had a plate or something to contain. There were bowls that I didn't see until later, which was like, I did not have a piece of pie. Berry pie looks amazing. Funny thing on that. I did have a piece the next day because we were sent home with them. Because the host of the party was like, I don't know how to have leftover pie. I don't know how to do it. So it just sits there. And I'm like, the fuck? You just eat it.
I know what to do with leftover pie. I know how to have it.
But then
it cream or ice cream.
Yeah.
Or both.
But then I was like, well, okay. What are other ways besides just eating it that somebody could have pie? And then since it was a berry pie, I immediately thought, oh, just having that alongside or on top of a bowl of oatmeal be fucking great. And so I did that the next day and I was right. It's so good. That was a really good treat. It was a great way to spread this because the berry pie is super sweet, and to blend it all in with the oats was a great way to kind of tame that down with the saltiness of the oats and stuff. So anyways, highly recommend that. If you have leftover pie, put it on a bowl of oatmeal. All that was to say, I did not feel like I was moderate in my sugar consumption. And Margaret and I were both like kind of dancey and kind of shaky because we had way more sugar than we normally do. And we were like, got to burn this off, got to use this up. Okay. And we were doing that for like an hour. It was just like, oh my God, get it out. That was a holiday, a special occasion. We don't do that all the time. So that's something. But I do like, I'll have like right now, like this is kind of new for me. Like this has only been the past 6 months, maybe 8 months or a year, but like dark chocolate, I love it. And I'm thinking, oh, dark chocolate, not super sweet, but there's sugar in it. And the fact that like if I could just start with like a square, if I could just have a square, like, which is like an eighth of a bar, that'd be great. But I can't, I can, but I don't. I have the other square that breaks off at the same time. And then I'm just like, well, I'm already a quarter of the way through this bar. I'll just finish the whole bar.
It would be wasteful not to.
And then I'm like, okay, well, I've already had a bar. I might as well have another bar.
There's that all or nothing mindset.
Yeah.
Because, well, the hard work I've done is now out the window, so I may as well just go whole hog. Because exactly. The day's ruined. Well,
the day's wasted, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which isn't true. It's never true.
No.
But yeah, I need to do some self-hypnosis and practices with intuitive eating. That's clear as day.
So after we spoke on Friday, I got my scallop and I also got some other stuff. I didn't record anything with the scallop because the whole weekend I thought I was going to be a lot busier than I was, and I actually ended up having a pretty good handle on the weekend. But I thought, I'm not going to have time to do all this stuff. So, I had all this fast food or all this, junk food. Mm-hmm. Had whatever it was, fish and chips or whatever it was and chips. Chicken. Yeah, southern fried style chicken and chips. And I finished it and I was like, it was fine.
Yeah.
But this the thing that I remember, as we've discussed before, and I'm remembering more and more, the dopamine comes before the first bite.
Yeah.
The dopamine is in the anticipation.
Yeah.
And that's why more and more I'm becoming more aware of this, that these meals are not satisfying. Not in a way that like I am full, but I'm not. I wouldn't say that I really enjoyed it. It wasn't worth it.
Yeah.
And so the other part of this process, I made on Saturday one of the most delicious things I've ever put in my mouth.
Nice. What do you have?
It's one of these TikTok trends, and it's Marry Me Chicken, they call it. And I did it with chicken thighs, but it would work. It would work fine with breasts. That's what she said. And it's it's onions and garlic and so you season some flour and then you dredge your chicken in the flour. You're not doing like a full coating. It's not like a fried chicken thing. But you sear it on both sides and it creates this lovely velvety kind of texture.
Okay.
You leave that aside. In the chicken fond, you then throw in onions and I think it was a red onion and garlic and chili flakes. And you cook that down for a bit. And then there's something else that goes in, but then there's like cream and parmesan. Mm-hmm. And then so you let that cook for a little bit and then you put the chicken back in. And you just set the chicken in the sauce and mm-hmm. let it cook for 20 minutes to thicken up.
Mm-hmm.
And I did some tagliatelle with it and then, you know, finished, got took the chicken out, put the tagliatelle in, did all, you know, all the mixy, and then put the chicken back in. And it was honestly, sun-dried tomatoes. So you actually, mm-hmm. what you actually do is you take the oil from the sun-dried tomatoes and you use that oil to fry the chicken.
Yes.
So you fry the chicken in that oil. And then you throw the sun-dried tomatoes in with your sauce.
Nice, yeah.
Outrageous. Like, absolutely outrageous. Genuine. Amazing. And I had the rest of it yesterday cold. Christ. Like, honestly, one of the nicest things I've ever put in my mouth.
Amazing.
And so the thought...
I'm just thinking that's what she said.
Yes, absolutely. And so the thought is like, again, food is... And I've wanted to scream this sometimes when we've had our conversations. Food, like, yes, it is sustenance, but it's also to be enjoyed.
Of course.
And I know you don't, you know, deny that.
No.
Sometimes we can, yeah, and you're really good at like, how can you make sort of tasty things out of these things that are really healthy?
Yeah,
and
like
sometimes
you just did.
Unusual.
Yeah.
But it is absolutely there to be, you know, we're not one of those people who are like, give it me and
we wouldn't have these taste receptors if that weren't the case.
Yeah, like, absolutely. And so if I'm going to go down this path of like, I'm going to eat what I want, effectively.
Yeah.
I'm going to make sure it's good.
Hell yeah.
So that it's worth it.
Yes.
Because having the, you know, the big pile of chips and all the other stuff, it's like, it's not worth it because it actually doesn't, it's just salt. Like, that's really all you're tasting is really, it's just salt.
Yeah.
And so if, you know, when I had this breakfast this morning, it was really delicious. And then I just had the idea to make a tuna melt today. And I did like some tuna and some, what's the big mozzarella, you know, some tuna and some mozzarella in the air fryer. And it was, you know, like,
yummy.
I want to make things that are going to be really yummy and scrummy and continue that because I want the food to deliver pleasure. I don't want the dopamine to come before I put the first bit of that in my gob. And so, yeah, that was the other thought of this is like a few sort of simple rules is like eat when you're hungry, eat because you're hungry, eat mm-hmm. delicious things, mm-hmm. and try not to worry too much about it.
Yeah, I love that. I have a series of questions for you. Now, okay, this isn't intended to at all to break the don't coach me bro rule.
Ah! Oh God, okay.
It's not, I know I'm already pre-framing it in that way. And it's like, it's not that, but I have an experiment that I want to try that you don't have to try it. But okay, so I'm reading this book that you recommended to me, How to Change People's Mind. This is not, they did not give me a guide. This mm-hmm. is not like me implement. It's just an idea that came to me.
Mm-hmm.
from hearing this, which is a really, it's I can't remember the author, David something.
I haven't read it. I something I was editing mentioned it, and I thought, oh, actually, there's a lot here that sounds like for the kind of work you want to do, especially if you're meeting resistance, then
And hopefully I can find a way to do it on myself. That'd be really cool. but like, and honestly, and I think I mentioned this to you in a text, like one of the early strategies is that it mentions is something that we already talked about on our bro episode, where like the thing is you just got to listen. You got to listen. You got to ask probing questions and listen and you know, bring it out of them. And eventually the person kind of talks themselves into the thing that they, the new belief. And they were giving examples of like, LGBTQ rights and abortion rights and political canvassing, and people like come around to a more progressive view once you dive deeper into whatever big or lowercase T trauma that has solidified that view in them. And then
I was going to say fear, but I think trauma is, absolutely.
Because
they're afraid of something. And that fear has potentially come from a trauma. So, yeah.
But that's a good clarification as well, because it also is a fear. Like they were assuming that this gay rights bill for gay marriage was going to pass until, by all canvassing, it was showing that it was going to pass, and then it failed. And then they did some canvassing afterwards and found that people were listing three things, one of them being we're afraid our children are going to get indoctrinated or whatever. And they kept canvassing, and then after a couple months, that fear died away, which was their number one fear, became not even a listed fear. And they were like, what's going on? And they realized that the ads that were running, that were telling people, you got to be afraid for your kids, they stopped running because the election was over.
Yeah.
So they weren't getting that message anymore of fear, fear, fear. Anyways, I thought that was fascinating, and we have no free will.
That in and of itself, that's a question that I would love to pose to people, is like, who told you to be afraid? Right. Where did that fear come
exactly
from? Who told you should be afraid?
Yeah.
And let's follow that, you know, let's unravel the thread on that sweater.
You're getting it. Yes. Are you getting it? So yeah, this is, I should have actually written out the series of questions, but I'm just gonna go for it, and we'll see what happens. This is probably gonna be just me stumbling into failure.
Title.
Yeah, that's a good one. You have mentioned before that sleep is an area of concern for you. And how is your sleep currently? Is that something?
I'm somewhat dragging myself out of bed, and I can definitely sleep in till about 10.
Okay.
But yeah, so, like I discovered or whatever it was, like Saturday morning, I think I slept in until 10 because I didn't have to get up, and it was lovely.
It is lovely.
Which I don't do very often, in fairness.
Do you typically set an alarm, or do you wake up with, you know, just you wake up naturally?
I would say probably both. I have an alarm, but I have typically found my body clock typically wakes me up around that time.
Do you feel more rested with one or the other, or neither?
Now this is interesting, because I used to have on my, God, what was it? Was it my Pebble or was it something else? I don't feel like the Pebble would have been sophisticated enough, but I'm sure I used to wear something.
There's a gentle wake up.
Maybe it was a Fitbit or something. I'm sure I used to wear something that would detect your REM cycles.
Yeah.
And you could give it a window.
Right.
Within which to wake you up.
Right.
And so if it saw that you were on the up, the upcycle, if you like, it would then wake you up, even if it was a little bit early. And, you know, same if you were sort of too down in there, it wouldn't drag you out, because it's the dragging you out of the cycle. If you're down, right. I'm getting the terminology not exactly right, but like if you're sort of down cycling, if you're in that deep REM, because it is a cycle of, I can't remember what it is, 20 minutes or more.
Something like that.
There is there is a cycle. And if you get someone when they're like the down, you know, the down of the wave, right. In the valley of the wave, that's when they feel groggy when you've dragged them out.
Yeah.
And so the science being, once they're near the crest of the wave, then you can pull them out. And I'm pretty sure I used to have something that did that, and it was pretty decent. And it was just like a nice sort of tap on the wrist kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that was working out for me quite well, because otherwise there can sometimes be. And, you know, I'm probably finding more often than not now that I'm awake 5-10 minutes before the alarm goes off.
Okay.
Sometimes a little bit more.
Nice. And do you feel like, are there things that you do before bed, either the moments before bed or hours before bed, that affect your night's sleep?
So there are things I know and there are things I suspect. I know that eating too late, and certainly eating certain types of food, will affect my sleep. And it's taken me, I don't deal well with change. So it's taking me a while to sort of accept that and remember, like realize my body is changing. It probably changed about 5 years ago, but I'm just, you know, finally catching up to the change. You know, I can't eat a big meal and then be great for the night. Will have some stuff. And sometimes, or almost all the time, I forget that when I'm doing the late night fridge raid, because as we've talked about dopamine and all the rest of it.
Why is it that this isn't one of the questions? This isn't one of the questions, but like, why is it that we want to eat so much before bed? Like, what?
Yeah.
What? Like, I get why it's bad to eat before bed. Like, I've seen I felt the repercussions, and I've seen the science. But like, why is it then that we want to eat so much before bed? That, what the fuck?
It's a weird one. And you know, so that was, I know that. Then there's the reckon, because of all the stuff that people tell you about blue light, that you know, getting rid of screens. If I'm honest, actually, what's nice is, so I've changed around my bedside a little bit, and now I have a nice little lamp. So if I wanted to, a nice little bedside lamp. So if I wanted to, I could get out my Kindle, which is nice. Somewhere, and I could read on my Kindle. And I know the second I pick up a book, I'm out like a fucking light.
And that would
probably set me off quite nicely.
That's great.
But I think one of the reasons I don't do that is because I'm like, I'll never get through the book because I don't seem to last very long.
You mentioned a couple drinks a week.
Yeah.
Like a rum and coke kind of situation. Uh-huh. Do you notice a difference in your sleep when you have that?
If it feels like, if I feel drunk, then yes.
Okay.
But not if I'm at that sort of...
just warm.
From nicely toasty kind of...
So you have... let's just say 2 times a week you have a rum and coke. The other nights of the week, do you still have the coke no rum? Or do you...
Sometimes up until 7 p.m.
Okay. How often do you think you're having something as late as 7, like that, like a Coke or a similar?
Could be every other day. It's not a regular thing, but it could be. It could be as frequent as every other day.
Okay. Do you think that could impact your sleep? Do you feel like that has, or do you think it possibly it's...
Oh, those are two different questions. So... I don't feel like it has, but that doesn't mean it isn't.
Right. I'm wondering, like, do you feel like maybe you have it so consistently, even if it's every other day, even if it's every third day, you have it so consistently that you don't kind of notice because it's kind of...
No, so I think I often. Do. I think I do. I notice. I know the restlessness and the toss and turning that you get with when you've got too much excess energy.
Is there a beverage or a drink or a thing that could be just the same to you as what you're having that doesn't affect you the same way?
I would like to think so. I would like something that is, that, you know, it's got to hit a certain spot.
Yeah. So of course there's the sugar substitute side of things, the stimulant on that side of things, but that's less what I'm, you know, only you can bring up aspartame. the other ingredient, the bitter ingredient in a Coke is the caffeine.
Yeah.
And having that, later. Yeah,
if I could lay my hands on, I feel like I have found caffeine free Coke Zero before.
That was going to be one of my questions.
If it was easier to get my hands on, I have no compunction in changing. Yeah. Yeah.
Have you,
it's just, like, it doesn't seem to be easy to find.
Right. I don't remember seeing it when I was there, but I also wasn't looking in the soda aisles.
Yeah, I feel like I've saw it once on a shelf and I had some, and I don't think I had any.
Did you notice any different?
No.
Like taste-wise or anything like that? So if you were able to get it, maybe that would be an interesting
100%
experiment.
Yeah, it's like, you and I differ on how harmful the aspartame is, but I'm 100% with you that that extra caffeine is a swap that is, you know, 100% worth it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the half-life on caffeine is like 5 hours. Mm-hmm. And caffeine works in two ways. Not only is it a stimulant, so it's pushing your adrenaline to engage and you got that hormone response, but also
diuretic.
Also that they actually don't really know why, which is funny. But it also blocks the receptors in your brain for the signals that you're tired, so it pushes you and makes you forget that you're tired, and so
that's fun.
Yeah, you know, it's very helpful when you need it.
I have been contemplating a jumping off the caffeine bus again.
Mm-hmm.
I was thrown violently off the caffeine bus at the beginning of this year against my will. Not maliciously.
Also, not entirely true. You still did have caffeine. It was just less.
Having the decaf.
Yeah, there's still 10 to 30% of the caffeine in there.
Yeah, but that 70% is the sweetest. And that's what causes the fucking head. Anyway, I'd go through that again, or, you know, figure out a way to manage it. And I think the stuff that we had and I have here, the Anadin Extra, because it has caffeine in it, is a good way to taper off rather than trying to go cold turkey and then ending up being in a lot of pain. So I don't know. I see that.
Could I make a suggestion that's different than that?
Yeah.
From what I've learned, taking a pill, you know, not aspirin, but there's like a painkiller, is such a disruption to your microbiome that I was very hesitant to take it, you know, Excedrin here when we were both so sick.
Yeah.
Because I know what damage it was at, but obviously you felt how painful that sickness, that flu that we went through was.
Yeah. I had the caffeine withdrawal on top of it. The Anadin Extra, so I had it, which is the same thing.
But since you make a coffee in the morning currently, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so if you were to maybe mix your regular caf with decaf to taper yourself down,
and then
use a decaf and then use maybe nothing.
Probably do it.
I'm just wondering. I'm just saying, like, when you suggest using a pill of it, I was like, oh.
Yeah. There's from one all or nothing person to another all or nothing person, right?
Yeah.
What's the quickest, easiest way to make a clean break?
Yeah.
It's to suffer for 2 days.
No.
I think that's a swap I'd be willing to make. I think the last time I did it, I didn't notice that much of a difference.
In your sleep or in anything?
In anything, really.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It takes at least 2 weeks.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. I'd give it months.
Yeah, I would suggest 3 months.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's as I say, it's.
What I mean? Yeah, it takes 2 weeks to kind of get back to maybe normal-ish.
Yeah.
The withdrawal symptoms are kind of gone at that point, but then yeah, to actually notice a difference in your physiology and your life, it takes 3 months. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think about things like anxiety, because that was one of the reasons that that was the chief reason that I jumped off it, I think, the last time, is because I think the last time I was drinking caffeine, I was drinking a lot more than I do now. And I think the stuff that I drink now is it's just not as strong and there's less of it, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Partly as well, having my fancy cup, because it keeps the drink long, hotter for longer, I'm not doing the thing where it's, you know, I'm forgetting about it for 4 to 5 minutes and then downing it because it's cold.
Yeah.
You know, so I actually do end up probably drinking a cup less anyway.
Nice. Cool. That's cool. And thanks for allowing me to kind of, I'm very unpracticed at kind of those probing questions.
Yeah.
And I want to experiment more with that. For sure. And I also don't have, like, I know like certain beats that I want to hit, but I don't know kind of the flow of things. And that's something that, you know, other people have studied and have a good design for and everything. I just need to kind of learn the beats a bit better. But
you say the beats thing is interesting, because part of that makes me think about, and I don't know enough about this and how it's done, but being mindful or wary of an attachment to the outcome that quote unquote you want.
Yeah.
And looking for certain beats might, you know,
not necessarily in directing the flow, but like, here's the opportunity for
this question, an opening, or
here's here's an opening for an analytical question, here's an opening for a deeper probe, here's an change the topic, you know.
Yeah,
like still
there was
definitely working on that side of things.
Yeah, the Seven Habits book has a bit about this, and about empathetic questioning, and then sort of detailed, it's like when you want to give advice, it was framed from a father and a son, something like the son comes to the dad and says, I want to quit college, and the dad obviously wants to say, you know, why would you do that, you've got to think about your future, all your prospects, whatever. And but there's a way of asking, you ask empathetic questions first.
Yes.
And once there's a point at which you reach like an understanding, and then you can ask, I can't remember what the other end of that is, but it's like more analytical type questions, or more details orientated questions. And then when you feel that pull back towards emotion, you meet that emotion with empathy. And then when that emotion is equal, you know, is sort of equalized, then and so that's how it's this sort of constant seesaw going back and forth, which, you know, I haven't explained very well, but I think was a good sort of chapter in that book, which is, you know, only very slightly problematic in places, but like there's some good stuff in there, and I think that was one of them, of how you meet those kind of conversations. And I suspect that there is a lot of stuff that all of that world is, you know, it's drinking from the same trough, I would imagine.
Yeah, for sure.
Because everything is everything.
Everything is everything. And as always, you can find your daily dose of 15 grams of soluble fiber in 1 cup of beans or in 3 tablespoons of psyllium husk. And correct me if I'm wrong.
Go psyllium husk.
Go husk!
Go husk! Curl your toes!
Curl your toes!